Welcome back to Surviving the Fandom, everybody. My name is Tegwith, and I have a very, very special guest with us today. If you have not heard of the book Survivor Legends, this is a great book that I am about halfway through now. I love it so much. It's the perfect book for any Survivor fan. And I have the author today, Sean Merchant. Sean, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan.
I'm so excited to talk to you about Survivor and about the book and, you know, kind of about your love about the show. But what I always start off with this podcast is just kind of tell me about you and Survivor. How long have you been watching? What got you into the show? And what about Survivor makes you kind of love it so much?
Yeah. You know, I was just talking to my mom about this. And I think I've been watching since season 3. At least. And I was like 4 years old. And the things I was watching was like Dragon Tales and Survivor. And I know, you know, we were a very kind of like limited media family. And so Survivor growing up was the thing that like we would record it originally on a VHS. Like I remember meeting my neighbor and when we would like forget to record on the VHS and like getting the tape they recorded. And then obviously like DVR changed that. But yeah, and every like Friday, our family dinner would be like up in the living room watching Survivor. And so it's just kind of always been a part of my life. And I've, you know, and that, you know, I left and went to college and continued watching and have since. So yeah, I've kind of been a lifelong Survivor viewer and fan, I would say. But then I started reporting this book and I was like, wow, there are people in this fandom that know far more than me and who are far more knowledgeable fans and active fans than I am. But it's been so cool to kind of like dive into that.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the one thing I've learned is that there is always going to be somebody who knows more than you about something that you are sure you know so much about. Yeah. In my own relationship, Ryan, my partner, knows way more about Survivor than I will ever know. So there's always somebody. But what about the show? Like, really, obviously you've been watching since a young age. Is it like nostalgia that really kind of drives you to continue watching it to this day? Or do you just kind of love the premise of this, you know, reality show?
Yeah, I mean, I love the premise. I think it is just a genius concept. There is nostalgia. I think part of it is routine. Like, I'll just like, oh, I guess I'm watching another season of Survivor. and I think, you know, as I've been more thoughtful about it, I think it is such a great reflection of like society and culture and thinking about what Survivor is highlighting and the conversations that come up and the people that, you know, become heroes and celebrities through this. Like, it's just such a cool kind of this very distinct and a distilled lens through which to like examine what America is today, you know?
Yeah. And you see, like, you know, obviously season one to now, it's such a different game. But, you know, I always say it's really about the people. The people make the show, which is why I personally believe that, like, Survivor's kind of, you know, they say Survivor's like pizza. It's never, even when it's bad, it's still good.
Yeah.
And it's because it's about, you know, people and human beings. And no matter how much the game impacts the relationships, no season will be alike. No two seasons, you know, will be the same, even if it's the exact same cast of people, because people behave unpredictably. And seeing that on TV is incredibly compelling. Because you've been watching for such a long time, is there a moment that really stands out to you as like a memory, a core memory that you have of like watching the show, maybe Robin Amber proposing? Is there like a moment that really kind of sticks out to you?
Yeah. I mean, when I try to think about my first Survivor memory, two things come to mind, and obviously kind of years apart, but I remember Ethan and just like, I think especially their like reward in this village, and he's like playing soccer with the kids, and that's such a like a moment that made him such a like a great hero and good guy. And I remember Rupert stealing the shoes at the beginning of Pearl Islands, and it's just like I immediately fell in love, and what a great great moment. But then, you know, rewatching now and going through it, there's so many fantastic iconic moments of Survivor that, to your point, you know, and the thesis of my book is kind of like this is a show about the people, no matter how much production sometimes tries to make it about themselves.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, doing these like profiles of of so many of the fantastic players who like made it, and getting to dive into those moments and understand what was going on in their head and like the behind the scenes was just such a fun project.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up. Let's talk about the book. So what kind of drove you to write this book? Is it just the love of Survivor, or did you meet like Survivor players and you felt like compelled to tell their story?
Yeah. So it was actually a commission from the publisher and the editor, which I'm so grateful for. But I am friendly with the editor and have worked with them before, and we watched Survivor together, and they wanted something around 50. So I kind of like pitched this idea, and it evolved over time. I think kind of the initial thought was maybe going to be more like coffee table book style, where you'd have a little blurb about a player and then a photo and go through it like that. And then the first interview I did was Richard Hatch, and I took the train up from New York to Rhode Island and met him at his house. And I like took my phone out. We were sitting outside by his pool, put it on the, you know, hit record, and we ended up just talking for like 6 hours.
Whoa.
I was just like, there is so much here. And going back to that point of like Survivor as a cultural mirror, like, you know, within his experience, but also within just like him sharing and being that open with me, to go into like, yeah, this can be much more of kind of a cultural history than I was originally expecting, I think.
Yeah, I think hearing Richard Hatch, Richard Hatch, I think is a very, you know, interesting first interview that you, it's shocking that it was also your first interview. Because obviously first winner, he kind of made the game that we all know and love now. He's the first person to say the word alliance, to even think about it. I mean, he made that crazy. I mean, he was part of the reason why there was that crazy merge vote of, what was it, 4-1 to 1 to 1 to 1 to 1 or whatever. Like,
poor,
you know,
Gretchen.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I know. And then also, you know, thinking about the ending of that season, if Kelly had won, it would have been a survivalist, you know, a whitewater rafter, you know, a person who does this, and less so a quote unquote game player, because even though she was in the alliance, it wasn't the same thing. And so really the fact that he won with the snakes and the rats and all of that really did change, you know, reality television, but really set forth what Survivor is. What was one of the like moments in your talk with him that really stood out to you? Where you said, wow, this is going to be like a really compelling story to tell.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously such a great storyteller, and so many of the people, I mean, again, I'm like so grateful that so many players gave me their time and trusted me with their stories. And that was like, not, you know, that was a privilege I didn't take lightly. I mean, I think thinking about his story, just like, he was made for Survivor, right? Like he talked about he loved the adventure and outdoors. He was kind of, you know, he had a very difficult childhood. He, you know, dealt with sexual assault. He dealt with watching his brother die. And, you know, it made him very introspective. He said he was gay, obviously, in a time and in a family where that wasn't super accepted. So he dropped out of school, and this like teacher at his school kind of like found him at a bar and was like, no, you're too smart not to go to school. And so he let him live with him while he finished high school. And he also took him to this outdoor program. And Richard Hatch was like, fine, like being outside and learning how to kind of become yourself and work with people and understand the world through outdoor adventure was really kind of like helped define his life. And so he would go on these huge hiking and trekking and backpacking trips. And he first heard about Survivor, his mom called him, he said, and she was like, you gotta apply to the show, it's made for you. And she didn't remember anything about it. She didn't remember the name or the channel. So he was like, okay, great. And then another friend, a second person, called him and told him that he had to apply for the show. And so finally she did, and he applied. And I think him, like getting an understanding from him about, he was like, I knew that going into the interviews, I needed to be entertaining. Like, I don't know if other people, because reality TV was so new, no one was really thinking about like playing up a persona or doing something. And I think, you know, I spoke to Lynn Spillman, who was the fantastic casting director for the first 40 seasons. She said she remembered him like taking notes by the door of the hotel and like watching the other people and analyzing them. And at the time she was kind of like, what is he doing? And she was like, I now realize he was already playing Survivor. One of my favorite stories is he said he walked into one of the final meetings. There was like 30 executives there. And he says, I didn't sit down. I put my hand in the chair and I said, what you already know is you're going to cast me. What you don't know yet is I'm going to win. And what you need to know for panning purposes is I'm going to be the host next year, and walk right out. And I'm like, to have the balls to do that when you're like interviewing for this reality TV show is just wild. And obviously Richard is very confident and kind of like has this bravado, but to know that early that you like had to play up this, that you had to play the game when like no one really knew what the game was fantastic. It was shocking.
I think that is the foresight he had to really kind of know what this was, what he needed to do and what he was. I mean, it was $1 million on the line, right? He was going to play. He wasn't just going to let, you know, anything happen. Just completely fascinating. How was it talking to Lynn? Cause she was in charge of, you know, casting for such a long time and casts a lot of all of the icons that we know and love, you know, Colby, Parvati, who else, like anybody. So yeah. What was that chat like?
It was fantastic. I mean, she's so interesting and so thoughtful. You know, I think her Survivor story is really interesting too. She was working as like a buyer in New York, and then she was like, I've been hustling for so long, I'm gonna go like live the chill life in California. And one of her first meals out in California, she was with friends, and one of the guys who was there like worked at MTV, and he was just like, I like you, I'm gonna like bring you to work with me on Monday. And she was like, no, I'm trying to rest. But he brought her to work, and she started casting some like MTV reality shows. And, you know, again, she was kind of the forefront of like real person casting, as she calls it, where for some of these dating shows, she had to like find 50 men and 50 women. And so you're just hustling, you're going to the boardwalk and finding anyone you can. And she then had a child, and she thought that she was going to take time off. And Mark Burnett got in touch with her.
Nope.
And she's like,
not going to take time off.
Yeah. Well, she said, I'm not going to take the job, but like, I'll meet with you. And then they showed her a little like clip of the concept, and she was like, shit, I have to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest is history. She said her husband told her to approach it like a man, and she wrote down all her requests and handed it to him, and they accepted. And I think, you know, her perspective is really important. So Ceri, for example, she was telling the story of, she saw Ceri's tape, and Saru was basically like, I don't want to do it, don't cast me, but like number XYZ is my sister, Cecily, and you need to cast her. And she, you know, Lynn was like, you're watching that. And Mark Burnett's perspective was like, why would I cast this person? She doesn't want to play. But Lynn was like, no, there's a star power there. And it was so laugh out loud funny. And so her, I think understanding people that well is like such a huge part of what made the show.
Oh yeah. I mean, casting I said it earlier, Survivor is about the people, and without casting, you don't have the people. Yeah. And you know, it is so important. It is integral to the show. It's integral to the game. It's just so important to everything. And so the fact that she did it for such a long time, and you know, Ceri is, I think, the best example of knocking it out of the park. You know, the woman who got up off the couch, she's literally doing ads for couches now. Yeah. Like she has, it's been such a part of her life for so long, and it's because somebody saw something in her, and she was incredible and was almost the first boot from her season, and then wasn't, and then became the woman that she is. And
legend.
So it's so the legend. Yes. So it's incredibly fascinating, just, you know, the amount of work and, you know, sight that you have to have in order to be able to be a casting. You have to really know people and what, you know, makes people tick. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now
and
tell
it's
us
a good reminder, I think, of how like as much skill there is involved in this, how much luck there is, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, oh, someone Cerie's video happened to capture them, or, you know, everyone said that Sandra was going to be the first person voted out of Pearl Island had they lost. And so, like, you have these incredible icons of the show that, you know, and it makes you wonder how many icons could there have been that have been forgotten or that have been under edited or whatever it may be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've said this, if you've listened to podcasts before, you've heard me say this a trillion times. But I truly think that there are people such as Brandon Donlan who prove that really almost anybody can play and win Survivor if given the time, if they have the time. Yeah. Maybe not everybody, but a lot of people. But if you have bad luck at the draw, if you're on the wrong tribe, sorry, you're SOL. And I vividly remember, I can never remember her name, but there was a finale, I want to say in the tens or teens, where Jeff shows the audition tape of one woman and she's like dancing and acting all kind of sexy and whatever else and like all crazy. And then they cut to her on the show and she's just like huddled up. She's like depressed. I think she was blindsided and she's on the bottom for quite some time. Somebody in the comments, let me know who I'm talking about. And I think that it just, you have to be able to see the potential in somebody, but also sometimes not everyone is going to be exactly how they portray themselves. Not everybody's going to be able to do exactly what they want. And so you kind of have to find the balancing act of hoping that you struck gold at least once, even if, you know, some people might not do exactly what they thought.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I won't name names, but I think Lynn said there were people that she expected to be fantastic who like never popped off. And there were people that she didn't expect would kind of pop off in the way they did.
It's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Now you talked to some other iconic players. Tell me about some of those other interviews. You talked to Sean Rector, right?
Yes, I talked to Sean Rector, and I'm honored to consider Sean Rector a friend now. He came out and was part of the New York launch event, and we've stayed in touch. And what a person! I mean, he is so thoughtful and so kind and really considerate. And I mean, talk about, again, like production missteps with the fact that this man has not played Survivor six times at this point is a shock to me. But it was so cool to talk to Sean. And, you know, one of the ways I frame it in the book is like all respect to Rob for all he's become. But, you know, you have this moment, I'm sure most super fans will remember, is like this Hunter Ellis vote out where Hunter was kind of the Colby. He was seen as someone who was kind of untouchable in these early years of Survivor. And what we see on the show is Rob giving his Godfather monologue, this iconic moment where he's like, I gotta have people who will fear me, who will follow me. And then blindsides Hunter. And it's this moment that like made Rob the master he is. But I talked to Sean Rector and he's like, that's not exactly what happened. He's like, I'm the one who approached Rob. I said, we got to get this motherfucker out now. And Sean says he understood that when you're black, you got to lead from the back. And he kind of let Rob take the more visible lead. And I'd like to think that conversations like that we would see on Modern Survivor, but in 2004, we didn't. And I think Sean Rector is probably the first person maybe on reality TV period to come into a game like this and say, hey, this if this is a game that mirrors society, the same inequalities and hierarchies that we see in society are gonna play a part of the game. And so like talk about legend making, I think like holding race that, speaking about it that openly while still having such humor and charisma and charm and playing, you know, a strategic game that I think we didn't even see as fully as we could have is pretty amazing.
Yeah, he's a fan favorite for many, many reasons. But definitely he just is. I had the pleasure to meet him at an event this year, and that he was somebody who he was like number one on my list of like, this is somebody I absolutely need to talk, like need to. Not, it's not a want, it's a need. I need to pick this man's brain. Because he's also an actor. I got so much hate on a video I posted once because I said about, you know, he said a fun fact that he didn't actually think that Survivor was real when he went on.
Yeah.
And that he was like waiting for Crafty to show up. He was waiting to be bused to the holding hotel or whatever. And then after 3 days or 4 days, he went, okay, it's actually real. And so I think that like also that knowledge, knowing that he genuinely didn't think that he was going to be roughing it in the jungle. And yeah. then he ended up doing that well. And it's, I think, quite impressive. But I said, you know, he was an actor living in LA, and everyone's like, no, he was a teacher in New York, in Harlem. And I said, yeah, he was that. They're not going to put on the bottom third wannabe actor in LA. Like, they're not right. going to do that. But he was. And I talked to him, and he I was also an actor at one point, and we talked about this, and he like did off Broadway work in New York and all of this stuff, and did Shakespeare. And it was just so much fun talking to him about like a shared interest outside of Survivor, but then also picking his brain. He is, this man needs to be on Survivor 19 yeah. times at least, because he's so charismatic. And I love that you also felt the same way.
Yeah. And the fact that his, you know, he has done great things in his life. Now he runs a really important nonprofit, and is, you know, he's fathers to thousands, he says, you know, where he's keeping, you know, he works in the inner city in LA and creates like after school programming to keep students busy and off the streets. But he was an actor, and you know, he apparently had a lot of deals come up after Survivor that he says production kind of nixed because of like network conflicts and stuff. And so it's, you see how much good he's done in his life, but you also see kind of how other dreams of his could have maybe been better supported. And you know, I end the chapter of Rob and Sean being like, we got Boston Rob, but what if we got Harlem Sean? And that would have been, what a great character of, you know, the franchise that could have been.
I 100%. And it's really fun. I got to meet Vesepia at the finale, and I was talking to her, and I said, is it true that a lot of your cast still stays in touch? And I heard it from Sean, I heard it from Vesepia. Like, they all do. And I just love that they're all so closely connected still all these many years later. Not every season can say that. Yeah. And it's not everybody on the season, but like Nayla, most people. And I think that's so wonderful that even this many years later, that they're still friends.
That's a special cast. It's a great cast.
It is a special cast. What do you think about Marquise as a season? Do you like the season?
You know, I like the season as a character study. I don't necessarily love the like strategy. It's not one of the most like engaging gameplay seasons for me, but again, I mean, to have these characters come out of it is awesome.
Yeah, 100%. There are some people, like, I'll get into you know, debates with some of my friends, and people rank it as like maybe a top 10, top 5 season, and I'm like, I liked it. It was fine, but I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't love it that much, but I'm happy. But that's the thing, and I said this in my last Surviving the Fandom that I did. The thing about Survivor is, if there's an opinion about Survivor, somebody is gonna have it. There's no opinion too weird, too niche, too nut. There is somebody who is out there with that opinion, and they probably made it in one of the comments of a Survivor video somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, it's how you know. Obviously, you are a Survivor fan. Do you have like friends? Obviously, you watch with your family, but do you have friends that are also big Survivor fans?
Yeah, I have a handful. You know, it's not like my social circle is all Survivor fans, and we always talk about
get it. A different circle.
I know. Clearly, I've done something wrong.
So with your friends that are Survivor fans, do you like still get into the same kind of debates? Do you talk about, you know, the same 5 moves? Do you watch together? How does that, you know, how does that incorporate into your real life?
Yeah, I mean, I watch with friends quite often. But yeah, I mean, I think clearly I've messed something up with my social circle, because like, I think what was really fun about this book is it's not a world that I'm like super steeped in. And so getting to like jump in head first and suddenly be on Reddit and have my algorithm be all Survivor stuff. And I'm like, wow, there are so many opinions and conversations. And I actually value that I like got to come into this a little bit as an outsider and not have these like preconceived notions shape, you know, how I was writing and how I was thinking about the different characters and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think most of my Survivor conversations tend to kind of be like season focused rather than pulling from the huge lore, because I just don't have, you know, as many people who have that kind of background.
The lore is, there's a lot of lore. I envy the people who have the memory recall that I do not have. I mean, there are people that can say the boot order. There are people that can, you know, name the third boot on, you know, Cook Islands. I think that was actually Cowboy. I don't, but you know what, you get what I mean. Like, you know, like the people who really can recall things. And I just am like, man, I wish I could do that, but I don't have that. I don't have that gene. I don't have that genetic like predisposition to be able to recall things. Listening back to conversations, what was one of the conversations for the book that you had that other than, you know, Richard Hatch, that really stood out to you? Did you travel anywhere else for any of the other conversations?
One thing I love about summer is how easy everything feels. The days are a little more relaxed and I find myself reaching for the same comfortable go anywhere pieces again and again. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on well-made essentials that naturally become those everyday staples you actually live in all season long.
Quince's 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and a summer upgrade your rotation needs, starting at just $34. And Phil, I told you this before, but I don't often wear linen shirts or linen pants. But now that I have them from Quince, I find myself going back to them time and time again, whether it's an upscale outdoor event or if I'm just hanging by the beach or at the pool, I'm reaching for these shirts all throughout the summer. Also, their tees are soft enough to live in all day, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you want when summer nights cool down. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a trusted favorite for everything from home to travel to everyday essentials.
Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/specialist for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/specialist with an S at the end for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/specialists. Your paycheck date could soon become the most irrelevant number in your life. Earnin is a non-bank finance app, 5 million people and growing. The concept is almost annoyingly simple. You earn money, you access it. Up to $150 per day of what you've already worked for, up to $1,000 between paychecks. Tips are optional and standard transfers take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers start at $3.99 and cap at $5.99. It's not about emergencies. It's just a better way to exist financially day to day. Worth checking out. Look, you all know I wear a lot of hats, and nothing annoys me more than waiting for money that I earned while due dates inch closer and closer. I did the work, so what's taking so long? We live in an era of instant gratification, so why don't we demand instant access to our money? The most essential thing we need to participate in society is the thing we wait for the most. That's absurd. End the absurdity today. Download Earnin on the App Store or Google Play, spelled like earning money without the G. Type in the specialist under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Access limits are based on your earnings and risk factors. Standard cash outs take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers available for a fee. Tips are voluntary and don't affect the service. Available in select states. Terms and restrictions apply. Visit earnin.com for full details.
So I met people in New York. I met Parvati when she was here for her book tour. And that was, I mean, an amazing conversation just because I'm like, holy shit, I'm talking to Parvati Shallow. But then watching her, I was like standing in the corner at the Strand and she was doing this book signing. And having now signed books and like interacted with people like that, the social stamina and charm that she had was just mind blowing. Because, right, I was probably there for like 3 hours and I left before she was finished. And each new person, she was warm. She was A, on her feet. She was warm. She would sign the book. She would talk to them. And I'm like, just watching her exhausted me. And yet, and I mean, it's part of what made her such a great player is that in these conditions, she could be as charming as she is. But that was really cool to see. Yul was an amazing person to talk to. He is so, you know, he's what you saw on screen, where he is really considered and thoughtful and yeah, just like the warmth and thoughtfulness that came from him was fantastic. Tyson is just as, you know, Tyson. I don't think I like laughed out loud as many times with anyone as I did with him. He's so dry and hilarious. Yeah. So it Tyson was everyone.
Tyson is so funny. He is just like, he is exactly, I've met him for about 5 seconds. He's exactly how he carries himself online. He's so funny. There is no character, like he is not playing a character. That is just Tyson Apostle. He is, I talked to him literally 25 seconds and he goes, I don't know if you know who I am. I'm Tyson. I won Survivor. And I just went, Tyson. I just laughed and gave him a handshake and like kept walking because I didn't even know what to do. He just is so dry. It's so amazing.
I mean, so one of my favorite anecdotes from him is he talks about, he was like, I was born to push buttons. And he wasn't a fan of the show before he applied. His parents were super fans. He had spent his career kind of like racing bikes in Europe and got back and was kind of like, what am I doing with my life now? And he applied. He was like, I'm going to ruin my dad's favorite show. That was the only reason he applied. He was like, no one gets onto these stupid things. And talked about the casting process. As he understood it, it was make a name for yourself, right? Like get recognized. And he was willing to take that. He would take, you know, pastries off the breakfast buffet and lick them and put them back on. He was staying on like a low floor. And he said he would get off at his floor, turn back, like hit all the buttons on the elevator, flip everyone off and just get off. And I'm like, and he said all of these guys, he said he was casting later told him that like physical violence was threatened against him by all the like macho dudes, and none of them made it onto the season, but he did.
I mean, he is such a like a casting gem. He's so funny. I mean, we just watched, have you ever seen House of Villains?
I haven't.
It's,
but I want
chaotic.
To.
It's crazy. And he was just on the most recent season of House of Villains. And I just was like, this guy is, oh, he's gold. He is so gold.
The fact that he hasn't done Traitors yet is wild to me.
No, that's
I want him and Richard Hatch on Traitors like yesterday.
Tyson, it's actually a crime against humanity that he hasn't been on Traitors yet. I want him to not be a traitor because I feel like just be stirring up so much random stuff as a faithful. Because as a traitor, it kind of, you know, makes sense. He would be a great traitor, but he would be a crazy faithful.
Yeah.
He'd be so good.
Great faithful.
Oh my God. He'd be so good. Now, going back to you and your fandom, do you believe, I mean, I think you said it a little bit. Do you think that writing this book kind of increased your fandom of the show more? Or are you now like, people are crazy, I can't watch it anymore?
You know, a little bit of both. I think it increased my respect for the players. It, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, slightly decreased my respect for like production. I think it increased my understanding of the show's cultural impact. And I argue that Survivor is maybe, you know, it's in the top five of like most significant shows in American history. I truly believe that, like, I wrote a story for Rolling Stone a few weeks ago that's kind of like tying Survivor and the invention of lying, for lack of a letter terms, to like our current political moment. So I have so much respect for the show. I am kind of like, I need to kind of purge my feeds because I've been so deep in the world and it's been such an emotional process and yeah, it's good to have an off season where I can maybe let go a little bit.
Oh yeah, off season is very much needed, I believe. Especially for season 50. I mean, season 50 was not a normal season. Season 50 was over a year long for the season. Cast was announced about a year ago, a year and a week ago, give or take. But speculation for the cast was 4 months before that. So it's almost been a year and a half of talking about one season of Survivor. Yeah. And so we really have not had an off season in about a year and a half. So it really does feel like there's really nothing to talk about. There's really no content. There's nothing, which is so freeing in a way, because there's so many other TV shows, but also, you know, I get to go back and watch some old seasons that I love and all of that stuff. What are some of your favorite seasons?
I mean, I think Cook Island, for as shameful as a approach, I think created amazing conversations. You know, I write about in my chapter on Yule and Cowboy, like having nuanced discussions about like how to be a representative of this very broad racial category on TV in 2006 is kind of unheard of. And to get to, it is only because of the race wars that those conversations made it. And so as short-sighted as it might have been in certain ways, I think like the players really made something fantastic out of it.
And also Cook Islands in 2006, the most diverse TV show ever. I mean, we're watching China, which is after Cook Islands, and you know, it's like 16 white people and like three not white people, four not white people. You know, Cook Islands, there are only 5 white people on the show.
Right.
Because there can, with the premise, there can literally only be 5 white people on the show. And so when I was watching it, I remember Ryan told me the premise when I was, because I only started watching Survivor in 2018. So I'm a relatively new.
I heard convert. That was shocking to me.
I know. You can get obsessed with something real quick.
Yeah.
especially 2 years after you start watching it and get obsessed with it. There's nothing to do except rewatch it all over again that you just watched. And so when he told me that, I went, I cannot watch the show in good conscience. Like I cannot. And he just is like, it's a good season. Just watch. And I just realized the forced diversity here, bad though it may be, created a great season because of the conversations, but we also just have like different perspectives, people that we would not have seen on TV talking. Right. So horrible concept, but I mean,
really, yeah, special. I mean, and then I think what Fiji having Yao Man and Earl and like them sticking to that kind of, that diversity at that point was, I think, made for great TV. I love Pearl Islands because of the, like, I mean, I argue in the book that that's really the season that like turned Survivor from a TV show into like a legacy maker, right? You have that and then you have All Stars right after it. And it's like, oh, suddenly this is not just a show to consume. It's a world to inhabit. I think that's a really special thing. And obviously, Micronesia, Heroes vs. Villains, Token Jeans, that run is pretty iconic.
Oh yeah. I mean, the teens cannot get better than the teens, honestly. Do you have a favorite player?
You know, I'm asked this now that I've like been on book tour and stuff, and it's so hard having met the people because you see how fantastic all of them are and you see the elements of them that, you know, I really respect and care about a lot of people. I would say before the book, Yule would have been up there. Yao Man would have been up there. I mean, Parv is always up there. I loved Amanda. I didn't write about her, but and now, I mean, a lot of those same people, but I would absolutely add Sean Rector just like as a human being. I love Camilla and having spent some time with her, like what a just like wickedly funny dry person as well. Tony is so kind. Tina Wesson is like the nicest person you'll ever talk to. So, you know, the list is endless now.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of Survivor. Like casting is so important. And then there are people that you're not gonna, you know, click with, which I loved. You talked about this where maybe I heard it somewhere else in your book, where Richard talked about how he said that he felt like when he was cast, he knew that Rudy was supposed to be his opposition. And yet they got along so well. And then again, it just goes back to, you know, casting is going to have preconceived notions of what possibly could happen. But then humans have this beautiful ability to subvert your expectations and really kind of maybe hate each other or love each other against all odds. And you know, it's quite fascinating seeing all of these people, all amazing in their own right, you know, get along or fight, you know, on national TV.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Richard and Rudy is such a prime example of it. And again, a prime example of Richard's ability to like, okay, I know that I'm going to really play up cocky and go crazy for casting. And then I'm going to pull back and I'm going to be a hard worker and win the respect of someone like Rudy. You know, I do feel like Richard is really, he's a prime example for me of like production bias shaping how a story plays out and how becoming the villain, you know, I would personally feel like Richard has probably done some stuff that I don't fully support, but becoming America's first reality TV villain and really facing the heat of that after, you know, I say like, his story could have been very different. It could have been this guy who found himself in the outdoors, who like, you know, multiple people in his life told him that he was made for this show. And suddenly he comes and he plays so well and he introduces strategy to the game and he wins. And I think part of that was not, I don't blame, you know, the edit for all of that. I think part of that is Richard's character. And a lot of that is the audience and who they were willing to like see as a hero and willing to root for. But yeah, I mean, I think if you think about what could have happened, had like him and Rudy been on tour and doing all this stuff to really support, you know, the cause and support the show, it could have been a very different story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, production really does shape, obviously what we see. I mean, it's not like Big Brother where there's a live feed where we can watch whatever's going on at any point in time. And, you know, you talk to fans of Big Brother, the live feeders have a very different opinion of the players than the people who just watch the TV show. Yeah. And so it shows in real time how an edit can hurt or benefit somebody. The first season I watched, season 25 of Big Brother, Cam was on there. I don't know if you know who this is, but the people who watched the TV show would have died for this man. Oh, right. Really? And the live feeders were like, we don't like this man. And he ended up winning America's Favorite because the live feeders are way outnumbered by the people who watch the TV show. Yeah. So it is kind of like a real life example of what an edit can sometimes do to benefit or in a lot of cases to hurt. I don't know if you've read Parvati's book, but in her book, she talks about how, you know, people would come up to her on the Santa Monica Pier and like chastise her and in real life and be like horrible to her, you know, because of an edit, and you know, not getting to know the full person. And so there's also that to think about with Survivor. And I do believe that Survivor has gotten better at showing more of a person than just the villain, than just the hero, than just, you know, whatever. But it's never going to be perfect because you can't boil down one person's humanity, one person's essence into a 45 minute or 60 minute television show once a week for 13 weeks. So it's just near impossible. But it is fascinating how really truly the editors and the storytellers of this reality TV show, you know, hold people's images in their hand a bit.
Yeah. I mean, and I think Parv is like the perfect example of that, right? Like she talked to me about, you know, this was one of the like first things she did out of college and she was young and like feeling, you know, she was called a slut and a vapid whore is what she says. And feeling the impact of that and kind of facing the experience of questioning if that's who you are and if, and, you know, how you're, you know, it's not something most of us have to deal with is like how we're being perceived and the kind of gaslighting of the perception versus the game you played versus the edit you've received is a lot. And obviously she's a great example of like reclaiming that and coming back so strongly and, you know, being one of the most like beloved figures in the show now. But I think she really struggled a lot. She was swirling in chaos in her words and she was like working as a boxer and coming back after Micronesia, she was like, I couldn't fight. She like had a panic attack the first time she entered the boxing rink. And yeah, the vast impact Survivor will have on almost anyone who plays, you know, and I think often very, very positively and sometimes less so. That's fascinating.
It's really fascinating. And I think that I do think that there are a lot of people criticize new era of Survivor because Survivor, Jeff says he doesn't want villains on the show anymore. Like, he said that outright. He doesn't want villains on the show. But what does that necessarily mean? And I've always taken it as they don't want to portray people as just villains anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I do also think that there are, maybe they're not casting people who are willing to say some crazy out of pocket, you know, remarks that they used to cast people. But I've always taken, and maybe I'm an eternal optimist, so maybe I'm reading too positively into this. But I take it as they want to tell people's full story rather than just, because I do think it can be very damaging to somebody who goes into a game to play a game. And then all of a sudden they hear all of these horrible things that people are saying about them. All of their words are taken out of context and they become this, like, they hated by everybody. Like, yeah. nobody wants that. And sometimes it makes for good TV, but like, what is the balance here?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I had this conversation with Kelly Wentworth, who also, I don't know if you've spent time with her, but wonderful, wonderful person, and very thoughtful about Survivor. But we were kind of discussing the lack of villains. And I think the two kind of ideas behind that we came to was, one, social media has made it really, really hard to be a villain. And, you know, you're signing yourself up for a lot of hate, I think, if you become that, and even if you don't.
Yeah.
And so it's frustrating, because I love a good villain, and I think also there is a little bit of kind of, there's an understanding of performance now that we haven't always had. And so when you had villains, you could really lean into like, oh, this person is real evil. Whereas, you know, there's some, you know, like someone like Ricard, who like is a little bit of a campy villain, or Shan, who's like telling us the music that's going to be playing below her, where like everyone knows that you're coming on here and you might be behaving more outrageously than you would before. And I think the third is really that, that idea of like, luckily the edit is showing much more full people, and it's hard to like hate someone that you're seeing this fully. I have a chapter late in the book, so you're probably not there yet, but it's kind of a comparison of Marianne and Jesse Lopez. And, you know, Marianne is like everything you would imagine in a hero, and yet, you know, betrays her closest ally in this really cutthroat move. And, goes on to win. Jesse Lopez like has a lot of traditional villain qualities and betrays his closest ally in an incredible cutthroat move. And so like, frankly, pretty similar games, and people who I think in the past would have been like put into, when Survivor was seen as this like heroes versus villains dichotomy, would have been very easily put into those categories. And now like Jesse's maybe my favorite player of the new era, you know, like getting to see someone for all of who they are, and seeing, you know, Marianne's insecurities and growth story, and seeing Jesse's, you know, love of his family and the way he just came out here to pull it out all on the line. Like it's hard to hate.
Yeah. That moment when he blindsides Cody, I thought was one of the first times I was going to see somebody be punched on television. I thought Cody was actually going to punch Jesse. Like, I was like,
brilliant moment.
Yeah. That was a wild moment. I actually have a hot take. I don't know if it's a hot take, but it's maybe a controversial opinion. And I mean this with all due respect, because I love a villain. I think Ceri's a villain. I think that she plays very loyally to a couple of people, but she orchestrated one of the most villainous moves of all time. And I think that Parvati has been able to I think that she's been given the majority of the credit for that, because number one, she was put on the villains tribe, but number two, right, she won the season. But really it was like Ceri being Ceri, like masterminding it all. Everyone had to play their part, don't get me wrong, but like the reason why Ceri is a hero is because people like her.
Yeah.
It's not because they're not actually looking at her game, which she does play very loyally to a select few, but a villain is somebody who is playing for themselves and then like doing kind of crazy things to other people to make sure that they get further. And for better or for worse, that's Ceri. And it's not, but that's not a bad thing. It's just sometimes you get labeled as a hero or a villain. Like what made Parvati a villain to begin with? She flirted?
Right.
Okay.
I think the prime example of this is like Colby versus Jerry, right? It's like the ultimate creation of hero, yes, versus villain. And Jerry does nothing wrong.
Nothing.
Nothing even really significant in that original season.
Literally, she did nothing except flirt with America's boyfriend. Right. That's all she did, really. Yeah. And I think she did. Oh, that was on All Stars. She talked about sex on All Stars. Oh my God.
Well, and she talked about chocolate on Australia that Colby took to mean, right?
Yeah. That was Australia. That wasn't All Stars. Yes. That cut people. And then she got booed off the stage at Madison Square Garden. Like, what are we doing?
Right.
Guys, ridiculous. So it's just a very interesting conversation, villain versus hero, what that means, but also the storytelling behind it, because your production holds a lot of that reasoning. What is a hero and what is a villain? It's just quite fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, I it has been so much. It's such a pleasure to talk to you about this. Can you tell everybody where they can get this amazing book if they want some off-season reading?
Yeah, I hope and believe it's fantastic off-season reading, and I think
it is.
You know, I think if you're a lifelong fan, there's a lot of just like reliving favorite moments. And someone described it as like going back to your favorite meal. I also think that if you're introducing someone to Survivor, new to the show, it's a really fun way to kind of get excited about it and learn about these people and learn about the impact of the show. But yeah, it's on anywhere you buy books. It's on Bookshop, Barnes and Nobles. It's hopefully at your local bookstore and you can ask them. And it's on Amazon as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Well, before I let you go, I need one last thought from you, which is, what do you see as like, this is a very big question, so you can be vague. I'm bracing you. What do you see as like the future of this franchise, the future of Survivor? Do you think we'll see a season 100? Do you think it's going to be, you know, cause that's, you know, not that far away. What are your thoughts on the future of the show?
Yeah. I mean, I'll say again, after when you asked about like, is it more exciting or am I tired of it? I was almost ready to be like, all right, maybe I'll lay off after 50. And then I saw that 51 preview and I'm like, they got me. They hooked me again. I think the open era will be interesting if it, you know, I think it'll depend on what it means and how it plays out. I think I see the future of Survivor more broadly, very dependent on CBS. I think if they're willing to continue to give it money, you know, we've definitely seen the budget era and the shortages that come with that. And I think it really, I hope the open era also means going back to like letting the players do their thing a little bit. And I think Survivor can be infinite if it's about putting, you know, 16 to 24 interesting people on an island and kind of like seeing how that plays out. That to me is Survivor at its best. And that is like a concept that I think can never fail because casting is really strong and because like the people on the show are all fantastic in their own ways. But we'll see if that's the path that is taken.
We will see. Ultimately, just like almost everything in life, it comes down to money. but it has been such a pleasure to talk to you today and listen to your stories about this book. Like I said, you guys, it's a very, very good book. It's perfect for any Survivor fan. And I think, you know, a couple of, you know, Survivor books have come out around 50, and I think that they all work. Sean and I were talking about this before, and they all really kind of go hand in hand together, I think, where one book may have, you know, personal stories. Another book has, you know, a kind of a more broader, you know, story take. It's, I think they're perfect kind of pairings for any Survivor fan. So I really do think think that everyone should check this out. But thank you again, Sean, for joining. Where can people find you if they want to, you know, listen to more, you know, Sean takes, whatever yeah. those may be?
I mean, I have an Instagram at Sean Merchant, first name, last name. And I write about things other than Survivor as well. So
get out.
I know, crazy. But yeah, a lot of my work is on my Instagram or at my website, which is also firstnamelastname.com.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much. And thank you all for listening to this Surviving the Fandom. There will be more coming your way, and I'm very excited about them. I don't want to, you know, tease it too much, but a lot of fun stuff during the off season. And as always, the specialists have a lot of really great stuff coming your way. If you're not a patron, you should go be a patron. There are episodes that drop on the Patreon every single week, many, many episodes a week of Survivor, non-Survivor, all of that good stuff. And we are also have some fun rankings coming your way. So keep an eye out for that. But again, Sean, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you all for listening to Surviving the Fandom. Until next time.
Thank you.